Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show, episode 921 of I Doubt It Podcast. I am your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and always scholarly Brittany Page, everybody.
So we want to start with an update on Brett number one, because yes, we talked about the situation with Brett number one and Jesse having to go back to Scotland, and they are still there. Brett and Lisa are still in Scotland, but there has been a lot of positive progress.
Yeah, still in the hospital, no longer in the ICU, which is a great step forward. And speaking of step forwards, he's actually walking and just doing a lot better, generally. Mm-hmm. So we really want to thank everybody who rallied, who either shared or gave to the GoFundMe. All of that is going to go a long way toward their extended stay in Scotland, and just generally relieve some of the burden that comes with times like this and unexpected health emergencies. So thank you all for your concern. All of the messages of support and love, they have been passed along, and we appreciate it so very much. It is interesting, though, that we took this massive trip that everybody was anticipating, what we were anticipating, and we talked about it leading up to us leaving, and then we never got to really talk about it.
Yeah, so I figured we could do that. There's no more doom and gloom that we're facing, and
I mean, other than the 2024 election.
No, I feel so good about that right now. Are you kidding me? It's the best I have felt about the election in a very long time.
Potential doom and gloom.
Sure, there's always... What are you trying to do?
I'm bringing you down, baby.
I'm normally there. Why would you try to force me back into that place? Let me be happy for a moment.
Then let's talk about the vacation.
Okay, so there were things that were absolutely fantastic about Scotland.
Da-dun. Da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. Oh, doom and gloom!
And I think we should talk about some of them. So the first one is, yes, we ate haggis. And yes, I love haggis. It was absolutely delicious. We had it a few times, and so we were able to compare quality. So there was some haggis that was better than other haggis. I will say that.
It's a question we're getting a lot, and I agree. We had it twice where it was very good, and then several other times at breakfast when it was absolutely meh.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to like a tourist joint, we don't hit a bunch of tourist joints, but some of the better dining experiences we had where they had haggis on the menu were really, really good, where I could see, oh yeah, I see what this is. This is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple places where it's just your standard Scottish breakfast and it's meh, you know, Yeah, take or leave it.
Yeah, well, when you say that we don't go to a lot of tourist joints, I think that needs some clarification, because it's kind of like you're elitist. You don't know where an Applebee's is near you coming out. And
yeah,
I've said that.
I've said that for years and years and years. When I was in no position to be judging Applebee's, I was judging Applebee's. So I stand by that.
Sure, sure. So
we
have a friend who's done a lot of traveling. And before we went to Scotland, he gave us seriously like a paragraph's length recommendation list of different places to go.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, and you can also cross-reference with different websites of what the top recommendations are and stuff like that. So we did end up going to very fantastic places that were awesome. And
the place I'm talking about with the good with the fantastic haggis is Stravagan, I think it's called, in Glasgow.
Don't ask me how to pronounce
it.
That's
how it looks like it's spelled, but who fucking knows with the Gaelic.
Well, another thing that I loved about Scotland was the public restrooms fully close. There is no gap on the door.
Oh yeah.
You are completely, everything is private.
Private time.
Unlike here in America, where there's a gap. So everyone who walks by your bathroom stall gets to do a little eye contact peek with you as they're headed to their own bathroom stall.
There was a lot of things about Scotland that I really appreciated. That is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's just a full Europe thing or UK thing or
beautiful.
Just Scotland.
Beautiful.
But there's been times where we were like Pike's Place Market. I was having an emergency situation, an emergency number two situation.
This is in Seattle.
Yeah, in Seattle. And like one of those where you're not going to make it to your hotel. You need to find whatever the nearest public bathroom is right now. And by you, clearly I mean me. And then I go into the bathroom, and it's not even like the gap on the door. It's like those old-fashioned doors like you see in Leave It to Beaver, where the top half opens and the bottom half also opens, except there's no top half. It's just me squatting there. Every person who walks in the bathroom makes eye contact like, I know what you're doing. I see you fully. I don't have to peek through a crack.
Yikes.
None of that in Scotland.
Yeah, no, no. I mean, I don't even know.
Also, of course, too much information for the audience. You're welcome.
I was going to say, is that your first shitting your pants story that you're telling everyone?
I didn't shit my pants. I made it to the toilet.
Nearly,
and then the community of bathroom goers got to join in on the triumphant not shitting of the pants.
Well, that's nice.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, other than I like private time.
Right. So the other thing that I liked is every time you went into a public bathroom, I don't know why it had such a profound impact on me, but the water was piping hot.
Like,
so, like, dangerous, almost, I would say. Like, burn your skin level hot coming out of the tap.
Yeah, you know on coffee cups people make fun of, like, the delicious drink you're about to enjoy is scalding hot. Beware.
Yeah.
It was the same thing where it's like, warning, when you turn on the hot water, it's going to be hot.
And
it's like an obvious thing.
Yeah.
But it needs to be said.
Yes, because it is quite alarming. But I did appreciate it because, you know, makes you feel better
you
about things.
You like to
things.
Burn off the germs.
Sure, even though I know that's not the actual mechanism of action that is killing the germs, I believe.
It makes
that
you feel good.
If you were to rank the things that are the variables that are in a hand washing experience, I believe it's the scrubbing that is most effective when it comes to killing the germs.
It's breaking down the lipid layer of the virus or whatever bug that you're trying to kill.
And that is your biology lesson for today.
You're welcome, everyone.
We can get a fact check on that from Dr. Ben. So, yeah, overall, I thought everyone was very nice, very friendly. It was beautiful. The weather was perfect. The people that actually live in Scotland were complaining to us about the weather and saying that they hated it, most of the people.
Yeah.
But we really loved it. It was very nice.
Well, they didn't know what they were up against with us, that the people who go to Montreal, Quebec, in January when it's 12 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's 12 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're weirdos.
Well, summertime is a nightmare, and currently in D.C., it is very much a nightmare. It's been over 100 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is terrible for Sweepy as well. She doesn't like it. So it was a nice reprieve.
So we were on Isla for several days. We did the touring of the distilleries, obviously. But we also had a guy who was driving us around who brought us to all kinds of different areas. The peat bogs and where they're cutting the peat out, and different ruins and different locks or lakes around the island, and churches way up on the... It was a great experience. Everybody was friendly. It was just an amazing, you know... It goes unsaid that, like, Edinburgh is like something out of a fantasy book, ripped from the pages of some kind of a novel. Bizarre how beautiful and like not real that place is.
Yeah,
obviously littered with idiot tourists like us also, but not so much that you can't get some amazing pictures to really document the experience.
Yeah, it was really cool. So we feel lucky to have been able to go, and you know, it's unfortunate that the end of the trip happened the way that it did, but we're happy that it's turning into a happy ending.
Yeah,
and
thanks
not a
lot.
Tragic
thanks
one.
A lot, Brett. Number one, really appreciate the extended vacation you offered. It's fantastic.
Well, I'm sure that once they leave Scotland, they're like, we are never going back to Scotland again.
Yeah. But if you're going to have a medical emergency, that's where you do it.
That would be a good place to do it. Yes.
No doubt. We love and appreciate you guys. Thanks for joining us today. We got a lot to get to. I want to drop the number just to prep you for listener communication going forward. We're not going to have any today, but we're certainly ready for your emails and voicemails talking about all of the things that are going on. There is no shortage of big news. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email a voice memo or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Let's thank our new patrons who have come on board recently. If you too would like to be a patron, I'll drop the address right now. It is patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. You go to the website, you pick your tier of support, and give for as little as $2 a month. You can help support this work, helping us move the conversation forward on an episode by episode basis.
We would like to thank our new Patreon supporters,
Shannon W.
Raphael. Christine W.
Christine W.
Joseph D.
Joseph D.
Wanda C.
Wanda C.
Glenn G.
Glenn G.
Roland.
Roland.
Neil P.
Neil P.
Hula Girl 1953.
Hula Girl 1953. Thank you very much.
Sunil N.
Sunil N.
Maripaz Z. And of course, if I ever mess anything up, feel free to correct me because I need that. Mike C.
Brent C.
William T. Mary W.
Frank DLH.
Taylor M.
Cindy.
Josephine N.
Mark.
Gil Q.
Estella R.
Deborah C.
Marvin H.
Scott F.
Timothy O.
High Rise.
Jim.
Four Hunter Four. And then we want to give a shout out to Cynical Guy.
What did Cynical Guy do?
Increase the pledge.
Fantastic.
Not very cynical.
Previous supporter of the show, continuing supporter of the show, just in a higher capacity. So again, listen, we could not do the show without you. You help keep you buoy our spirits for one thing. All of this support goes a long way toward keeping the morale up, but it also keeps the lights on, the microphones funded. All of our efforts are made possible by your support. Again, patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast.
Dollamocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So we're going to get to all of the big news about President Biden stepping aside about Kamala Harris stepping up and all of the amazing momentum that has transpired since that announcement. But
wait. I thought it was manufactured enthusiasm. That's what I heard from Jesse Waters and the big-brained Ben Shapiro yesterday on Fox News.
Yeah, it's interesting that they are trying to roll with that, because there's been 126 million raised since Sunday.
Yeah.
And over 1.4 million in grassroots donors since Sunday.
I don't know about vast majority, but a substantial majority first time donors too.
Like 60%.
Yeah, it's not manufactured enthusiasm. There's real enthusiasm for a Kamala Harris presidency.
First-time donors in 2024.
Yes.
Yeah. And then 2,000 people applied to work for the campaign in the first 24 hours, and over 100,000 people have signed up to volunteer since Sunday.
Yeah.
So
that's not manufactured. That's organic grassroots support for a candidate that is animating the electorate to support her candidacy.
Which is what we need, and it's what we've been missing.
Yeah.
And it's what Joe Biden wasn't doing when he got on any public stage. He wasn't creating this excitement.
Well, it's what we've been bitching about for months and months and months relative to Joe Biden and his take on how to campaign, is why is he not selling it? Why does it take a Gavin Newsom to get out there? I mean, these aren't new criticisms that we're just now having. These have been for months. We're like, Joe Biden needs to go out there and sell it. He needs to tell the American people, these are all the things I've gotten done
right
in my short 3 years. And it is huge. He has led a very progressive administration despite not being a progressive himself. And there are things to sell. There are victories that have happened in spite of the fact that there's an obstructionist Republican Congress.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to get to all that in a moment. But there's an important piece of news that isn't related to the election that we don't want to skip over, and we want to make sure that we talk about and spend some time on. And this is a body cam video that was released after an Illinois deputy fatally shot a black woman named Sonia Massey. And this is a horrific video. I'm going to play a news package. We're going to play a news package that features a portion of the body cam. It's not going to go all the way through the body cam, but it's going to take you through kind of the points of what went wrong and what happened here. But something that's important to note about this story is so often we see in these situations where police kill someone is that they shouldn't have been a cop in the first place.
Yeah.
And that is the case with this cop. His name is Sean Grayson. He should have never been a cop in the first place. And that's because he had two DUIs and he worked at six different law enforcement agencies in Illinois since 2020. What was he doing?
Six since 2020.
Cycling through that many different police departments since 2020. And we don't know yet. It may take some time for the reporting to come out on what exactly was going on, what other human rights violations he committed. But it's important to talk about this video and important to talk about what happened to Sonia Massey. And we're going to start there.
Shocking body camera video released today shows the deadly police shooting of Sonia Massey. The mother of two called 911 just before 1 a.m. because of a possible prowler, only to be shot by a deputy inside her own Illinois home. The now former deputy faces three counts of first-degree murder. CBS's Roxana Saberi has the video that shows the chaotic moments, and we do want to warn you that it is hard to watch.
The body camera video reveals the events leading up to the horrific scene.
What took you so long to answer the door?
Oh, I was trying to put on some clothes, sir. I'm sorry.
You doing all right mentally?
Yes.
Sure?
My medicine and stuff.
All right.
Inside the home, Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson can be heard asking Sonia Massey to check on the stove.
We don't need a fire while we're here.
Within seconds, things become tense.
Away from your hot steaming water.
Away from my hot steaming water?
Yeah.
Oh, I would rebuke you in the name of Jesus. I rebuke you in
the name of Jesus. God, I swear to God, I'll drink your
Massey starts to set down the pot and apologizes. Grayson fires three times, striking her in the face.
Headshot wound to female, 1078.
Prosecutors say Grayson's partner tried to give the 36-year-old first aid, even though Grayson discouraged him.
I'm gonna go get my kid. She's done. You can go get it, but that's a headshot.
Civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump is representing Massey's family.
Sonya needed a helping hand, but she got a shot to the face by the police.
James Wilburn is Massey's father.
I'm heartbroken. I just don't know what to say.
What's the hardest part about this for you?
I think the last words that my daughter said to me was, "Daddy, I love you." And to know and realize that I won't see her again, I can't talk to her again, I can't touch her again.
Grayson has pleaded not guilty. When reached by CBS News today, his attorney declined to comment. Last week, Grayson was fired from the Sheriff's Department. Documents obtained by CBS News show he has worked for six different law enforcement agencies since 2020. Nora?
That's noteworthy, Roxana Saberi. Thank you.
What they don't say in this clip is that after this armed agent of the state who shot in the head multiple times a woman who called the police to her own house, after he killed her, she's laying there dead, he's calling her a crazy bitch on the body cam footage. Again, I mean, it goes beyond a police culture issue here. We're not hiring the best people. We're hiring the worst, the absolute worst, most unhinged, most callous, most sociopathic.
Well, and think about that, because he asks her to go and remove a boiling pot of water from her stove. And so she goes to remove that. And he backs away from her like he's fearful in the moment. And yeah. So she questions that. She's like, "What? Where are you going? What's happening right now? Why are you reacting that way when you asked me to remove this boiling pot of water?" And he says, "I'm moving away from your boiling pot of water." And she says, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." And apparently he doesn't know what the word rebuke means. He doesn't know what that means, because he says, "You better not, or I'm going to shoot you in the fucking face."
Right.
And then he does.
After having acknowledged that there's a possible psychological crisis taking place anyway, right, walking in the door. "Are you mentally okay?" he says.
Right. And actually, her daughter has confirmed that she has a diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia.
Right.
And so this is a situation where we can have a conversation about how cops shouldn't even be carrying guns.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be cops responding to this call if they had concerns that maybe she was experiencing a mental health crisis, that this should be mental health professionals that are responding, that we should be funding that in this country. But that's, you know.
You know what we are funding? The murder of unarmed black folks.
Right. And in addition to that, I kind of forgot where I was headed in the moment there, but police radio traffic that was obtained by The Guardian shows that someone at the scene of the killing was saying her wound was self-inflicted, and the dispatcher asks for clarification, and a man confirms a second time, self-inflicted. So the spinning of this story happened immediately, and actually her father went on with CBS News to discuss this shooting, and he backs up this argument that he was not given accurate information from the start.
"Well, I was never told that it was a deputy-involved shooting. We were under the impression that she was killed by the intruder or some other person from the street or something, and they just went in there and found her dead body. I did not find out that the deputies killed her until my brother asked for Sonya's address, and I gave it to him." Mm-hmm. He said, "Brother, this says deputies involved." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" But we were all misled to believe that. And then there was a story that this was self-inflicted, a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Oh, my goodness.
So I think the The cover-up started from just right after it happened. And thank God for the body camera footage. It's probably the most horrible and heart-wrenching thing that we've ever seen in our lives. But if it were not for the body cam footage, we would not have known that this occurred.
While I was listening to him talk, I remembered something you said triggered a thought, and it was kind of along the lines of what he's saying without this body cam footage, because we're able to hear after he shoots this woman in the face that he's calm. He is discouraging his partner from going to get a medical kit, saying, "It's done, bro," basically. I mean, that's like his tone. That's his approach.
"You can if you want to," he said, "but she's done."
And imagine how, I don't know, you would expect that someone would feel panicked after they've done this. They would feel like they made a mistake. They would be scared. They would be, "Oh my God, what did I just do? How did I let this happen?"
Instead, he's calling her a crazy bitch.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just the callous disregard for someone's life is so disturbing. So, yes, it's good news that he has been arrested and charged. Yes, it's great news that he was fired. There are still patterns here that we see in so many other cases like this, where they're trying to lie. They're trying to cover it up. And the body cam footage is what saves the day. And we have also Benjamin Crump. They reference that he's the family attorney, and he was sitting next to Sonia's father during this interview, and he talked about how there's just no justification for what we see on the body cam footage.
"You know, it's just no justification. No matter what he tries to say, we see this video with our own eyes. And Vlad, this is one of the worst videos of a police shooting ever. I mean, he did not have to shoot her. And you see him, even though he's trying to say he wasn't going to have this boiling water get to him, he actually walks around the counter and engages to get a better shot. And that's what the state attorney's investigation found, that he actually engaged her. He could have done so many things to not shoot her in the face. He could have backed up. He could have used taser. I mean, it was the size difference. Vlad and Gail, he's over two times as big as her. She's 5'1", 110 pounds. He's like 6'5", 260 pounds. It's just senseless and god-awful."
Now, look, it is a good thing that our culture, our society, is progressing in a positive direction. Not quick enough, obviously not quick enough. But to have him charged this quickly is a good thing. It's not perfect. It could be better. But hopefully, when prosecutors and DAs and municipalities across the country start endeavoring to actually deliver justice to victims, it will be a sea change and motivate a culture change within police departments. That's what we can hope for. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen fast enough. We need to root out these quote-unquote bad apples. And we also need to root out the quote-unquote good apples that don't talk about the bad apples year after year after year after year, while maniacs like this guy go unchecked in their job, abusing. He's not killing everybody he comes in contact with, but I guarantee you there are reports of abuse and overreaction and violence that don't rise to killing, but certainly are violating people's civil rights.
For sure. Yeah. So we would love to know what you think about this. You can call, leave a voicemail, 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. So we're going to talk about the election now. And I mean, we're almost to August, then it's going to be September, then October. I don't know if you guys know, then October comes after September.
Is that
September,
what comes after September?
And then it's November.
Listen, Republicans are, I mean, they're rudderless anyway, but they've wanted Joe Biden to drop out. They've goaded him. They've pressured him. "You're not capable, you're not qualified," whatever. This investigation from James Comer and Jim Jordan that's just going to fall away. It's just going to evaporate into the ether. And now all their fuck Joe Biden and Brandon merchandise is just going to sit in a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know what to do now that there is such enthusiasm surrounding the candidacy of Kamala Harris. They're lost right now.
Yeah, well, and the Trump campaign filed an FEC complaint trying to block the Biden funds from transferring to Harris. And I, of course, have no expertise in this area, so I'm relying on people who do know about this stuff. And according to the people who know about this stuff, it's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
It's a desperate attempt to try to, like, slow something down or prevent the cash transfer, but it's not going to work. And even, we talked about it, she has received so much money since the announcement was made on Sunday that it doesn't really matter. I mean, sure, they would like to have the $90 million or whatever that he doesn't want transferred, but... She's made a lot of money.
All they're doing is gumming up the works, slowing things down, trying to create some controversy where they're scrambling to make some controversy around her being the nominee. And it's at every turn, even things they think that are going to go viral against her end up being in her favor, like the coconut tree thing. And there's a number of them.
Yeah. So we're going to jump back because it's not I Doubt It podcast without a little bit of media criticism. And we don't have a ton of that on the show today, so I wanted to kind of start with it here. And this was from CBS. They were specifically reacting to J.D. Vance's speech at the RNC. And I want you to just hear the framing here.
Joining Ed with me is our chief election and campaign correspondent, Robert Costa. Bob, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, what were your takeaways last night?
For Senator Vance, this was an overture to working Americans in states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. He is saying to them, we stand with you. These are the key voters in the election. President Biden has done so much to court them, going to Union Hall after Union Hall. Senator Vance last night said, we are going to compete for them as much as anybody.
And then they go on to a different topic.
Very funny that Joe Biden, President Biden, has done so much to court them on the campaign trail. No, he's actually done it through policy and delivering on campaign promises of having a renaissance, a revival of manufacturing in this corridor in the United States of Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, what is commonly known as the Rust Belt in America. Because of the decline of manufacturing is now, I wouldn't maybe say robust, but certainly having a comeback. And it's because of Joe Biden and the infrastructure bill and the inflation abatement methods or legislation that they put forward. But they're going to paint him as some kind of a champion, J.D. Vance, paint him as some kind of a champion for working people.
Yeah, frankly, take your pick about how to give this more context that would make it not a problem. But, I mean, for me, it's like he could have mentioned that Trump and Vance are running on cutting the corporate tax rate from 21% to 15%,
yeah,
which would give $4.1 billion in annual tax cuts to JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs. That's five banks that are getting a combined $4.1 billion tax cut. And this is from the Center for American Progress. So, like, they're giving the tax handouts,
yes,
to billionaires, to corporations, to banks.
While being virulently anti-union and anti-worker.
Yeah. And so can you give that context? Like, sure, they're trying to court working voters, but what are their actual policy positions that will benefit working class,
yeah,
voters? It doesn't exist. But what's happening to J.D. Vance is something that I just love, because he's just not succeeding. He's not charismatic. He's not particularly interesting. His crowd work isn't good.
He's just a radical. Apparently, I've read reporting that Donald Trump was on the verge of picking Doug Burgum, who would have been another terrible choice, but he's another rich guy, a billionaire. And Donald Trump was ready to pick him, but his dopey kids, Don Jr. and Eric, convinced Donald Trump to pick J.D. Vance. And now that Biden's out of the race, it's just a spotlight on what a radical, subservient, ass-kissing freak he is.
I hadn't read that report, but I did read a report that Tucker Carlson actually talked to Trump and really went hard for J.D. Vance as well. So
he was spinning conspiracy theory about if you put anybody in there, like if you put a Marco Rubio in there, the deep state will try to assassinate you, Donald Trump, to make Marco Rubio the president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is going to be kind of petty. This isn't actually like a policy difference or anything. But
I'm here for it.
But J.D. Vance tried to tell a joke at a recent rally, and it did not go very well.
It is the weirdest thing to me. Democrats say that it is racist to believe... Well, they say it's racist to do anything. I had a Diet Mountain Dew yesterday and one today. I'm sure they're going to call that racist too, but it's good. I love you guys.
But you cannot tell how awkward it is just from the audio. I'm realizing it now. Watching him, he knows he's drowning. Mm-hmm. He's looking for a flotation device because of his terrible fucking joke.
Yeah, he went full Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
Please clap.
But please laugh would be the thing that he's begging.
I love you guys. Hoping that would be another applause line is what he's doing. And I love you guys. Oh, yay, you love us. But nobody does it.
Yeah, and listen, we all have different approaches to how we handle bombing. You can lean into it and say, wow, this is really going poorly. I won't ever use that Diet Mountain Dew joke again.
Well, that's the other thing. Is that what he thinks? It was in Virginia, Southern Virginia, with a bunch of MAGA hillbillies. I mean, it was an audience filled with these people. And he wants to regale them. He wants to regale them of the tale of drinking the Diet Mountain Dew.
People he claims to know well,
yeah.
Given that he's the author of Hillbilly Elegy.
Right, right, right.
Yes.
Very, very funny.
But, okay, this other thing happened where Elon Musk pledged...
Please clap.
Elon Musk pledged to give, like, $45 million a month to a super PAC supporting Donald Trump.
Yes.
That has since been backed down, apparently, which is great. But Donald Trump was at his rally and he was talking to his crowd. Again, this kind of goes back to the CBS framing of like how he's trying to appeal to working class voters by talking about his billionaire buddy, Elon Musk, who's going to give him $45 million a month, and how it's going to be important that the Trump administration make life good for people like him.
And so are other. We have to make life good for our smart people. You know, we have some smart people. We have to make life good for our smart people. And he's as smart as you get. But Elon endorsed me the other day, and I read, I didn't even know this. He didn't even tell me about it. But he gives me $45 million a month. A month.
If Donald Trump says, I didn't know this, he didn't even tell me about it, you can guarantee he fucking told him about it.
I'm learning this for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. You know he told him. You know they were in coordination and it's something he was told.
But also think about how strange this is that everyone in the crowd cheered for that. I mean, from my perspective, as someone who spends a lot of time reading about poverty and homelessness and focusing on issues of income inequality, if I was at a rally for a politician who's bragging that some billionaire is going to give them $45 million a month in a PAC and talking about how they want to make life good for that person.
In direct connection, the very next sentence followed, one followed the other, that, oh, he's going to give me, we got to make life good for these people. Like, the richest man in the fucking world, we need to make life good for that guy? His life's already pretty good, Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, and you're leaving that rally to go home and, you know...
Take a shit on your golden toilet?
I mean, yeah, you're... I don't understand it, and it really frustrates me, but there's also been old clips surfacing, because now the Republicans are starting to say that the Democratic Party cannot claim to be pro-democracy when they just advanced Kamala Harris right through without it having any kind of voting process. Never mind the fact that everyone is aware that voted for Joe Biden, that she is the vice president. And so there's this old 60 Minutes interview that's going around where then candidate Joe Biden was talking about this issue specifically related to his age and why he chose Kamala Harris for vice president.
Your age makes the choice of your vice president all the more important. Why do you think Senator Harris would be ready to step in and become commander-in-chief if something were to happen to you?
Number one, her values. Number two, she is smart as a devil. Number three, she has a backbone like a ramrod. Number four, she is really principled. And number five, she is has had significant experience in the largest state in the union, running the Justice Department. It's only second in size to the United States Justice Department. And, you know, obviously, I hope that never becomes a question.
As an aside, Donald Trump was just asked by Jesse Waters, why did you choose J.D. Vance?
Oh, my God.
And he didn't list off in rapid succession five solid reasons why. He said, well, me. I picked him because he likes me. He used to say bad things about me, but now we get along and he really likes me. Me.
I didn't see that clip. Oh my God.
So juxtapose the answer you just heard about why Kamala Harris is qualified to be president of the United States, why she was picked by Joe Biden to be the vice presidential nominee and ultimately the vice president of the United States, and that people resoundingly, 7+ million more people in 2020 voted for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris than for Donald Trump and Mike Pence.
Yeah. So remember this clip, this 60 Minutes clip, whenever you hear the Republicans feigning concern about democracy.
Yeah.
So there was also... Vice President Kamala Harris was also interviewed during this. So this is from 2020. And this is an example of how I think that Kamala Harris will be so effective at not only making the case for the administration and against Donald Trump, but I specifically love the way that she handles questions about Donald Trump and reports about how she would approach him. Like, for example, before we play the clip, there was an interview that I saw or reporting that I saw where Kamala Harris was asked, how would you have handled that debate with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? You remember the one where they were standing around and walking?
And Donald Trump was like stalking her around the state, following her around, like way too much closeness.
Yeah.
Like behind her, like being a creeper.
Yeah. And Kamala Harris said she would have turned around and said to him, why are you being so weird?
Yes. It is what I like about her. She's relatable and normal.
Yes.
Very comfortable in her own skin while in front of the camera, while she has a microphone. She's just normal,
yes,
regular.
Yes. And that's how they should be dealt with. And so similar to that, she was asked if Donald Trump was a racist in 2020. And this is how she responded.
President Trump has attacked you frequently. He's called you a monster. He said you're nasty and it would be an insult to our country if you became the first female president. Do you see this as just the rough and tumble of politics, or do you view those attacks against you as racist?
Well, this is not the first time in my life I've been called names. And it, you know, it was predictable, sadly.
Do you think the president is racist?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. You can look at a pattern that goes back to him questioning the identity of the first black president of the United States. You can look at Charlottesville when there were peaceful protesters and on the other side, neo-Nazis. And he talks about fine people on either side, calling Mexicans rapists and criminals. His first order of business was to institute a Muslim ban. It all speaks for itself.
So she laughed, like, yes, of course. What? Yeah.
Right.
Of course he's a racist.
Yeah, I like it because it's not playing into your typical, well, you know, I don't know, but he certainly says things that a racist would say, rather than just saying, yeah, he's a fucking racist, bro.
Yeah, they always say that, right? Well, I don't know what's in his heart.
Yeah,
I don't know
do.
What's in his head.
Yeah, we do. Because it comes right out of his fucking mouth.
Well, and this laughing thing is becoming a big thing on the right. They're trying to attack Kamala Harris for laughing when she has a fabulous, contagious laugh. I don't understand why this is what they're running with.
Listen, if she had a laugh like me, I could understand making fun of her. But this is also the party that said nothing about the hours and hours and hours on a loop that we have of Tucker Carlson laughing like a fucking jackass. But it's apparently disqualifying for a woman to laugh. And again, like you said, it's infectious. It's not an irritating laugh.
Yeah. So this is Sean Hannity apparently running with the most prominent criticism that he has of Kamala Harris.
Here's just one reason that voters seem to detest Kamala Harris. You decide.
Okay. So.
And is that a socialist or progressive perspective?
No. I thought we were supposed to conserve things. I couldn't reconcile it. Now I can.
Yes, you're giggling, Vice President.
Yeah, so that's the biggest criticism that he has. So
he's really phoning it the fuck in, isn't he?
Yeah, keep running with that. But this is an example of how women can't win in leadership positions, in positions of power, because
you mean colloquially they can't win no matter what they do. They're talk shit about. You don't mean like she can't win electorally?
Of course, yeah. And it, you know, people hated Hillary Clinton. They said she was unemotional, that she was not genuine, that she's a robot. And so then you have a woman in Kamala Harris who is very obviously not those things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's not unemotional. She's not a robot. She's very joyful. She is emotional. She feels things. She has empathy, and she displays that very readily. And that's also a problem.
Yeah.
So there's no way that you can behave that will be acceptable to those people, like Hannity and like all of these other racist and misogynists coming out of the woodwork.
I was just going to say, because it's not just about the laughter. It's also now that she's the DEI candidate, that she's unqualified, that she's lazy, that she's not smart, she doesn't speak well. All racist tropes against black folks for hundreds of years.
And Kellyanne Conway wasted no time. She jumped all over this.
She had disastrous staff turnover as vice president. I check it on the daily. Her public schedule, gentlemen, rarely has anything on it or one or two things on it. She does not speak well. She does not work hard.
All right, so Kellyanne, let me ask you.
And she should not be the standard bearer for the party. Yes, sir.
Like, we need her fucking advice as to who the standard bearer for our party is. A woman who is a fascist enabler, if not fascist herself, working in service to Donald Trump, a man who wants to end democracy in America. Fuck straight off Kelly Conway.
Kellyanne Conway.
Kelly Ann Conway.
Yes.
Another syllable.
I just want to make sure you direct that to the right lady. So Stephen Miller was also joining the chorus of people.
The totally not racist white nationalist Stephen Miller.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun because these people were really, I know that like melting down is used as like a clickbait title on YouTube, but he was really melting down.
His voice attained new pitches and octaves that I didn't know were in his range, in his register.
They held a primary. People, they had ballots. They filled out circles. They went to the voting booths. They spent money on advertisements. And as President Trump said, the Republican Party spent tens of millions of dollars running against Joe Biden. Now they just woke up one morning and said, never mind, we're canceling the entire primary. We're getting rid of our candidate, and we're pretending the election has never even happened, and we're going to let donors handpick a new nominee.
I'm Stephen Miller, and I'm outraged about how Democrats are going to be disenfranchised. What we need is more democracy, not less. I say it, Stephen Miller.
Is this like what the young people would call cope and seethe?
Oh, that is cope and seethe. Absolutely. I mean, that is wailing and gnashing of teeth while feigning to support and have any concern whatsoever over representative democracy. Fuck yeah. Straight off Stephen Miller.
Well, and again, this is why I'm hopeful. We can talk about the money coming in. We can talk about the number of people who registered to vote. Those numbers were also off the charts. It has just been fantastic. And you actually hear from reporters. I've seen tweets from reporters who were at some Biden events before he stepped down and who were at Kamala Harris's first event, campaign event, yesterday. And they talked about how remarkable the difference is in the energy and excitement in the crowd. And right now, the big question is, who is Kamala Harris going to choose for vice president?
Mm-hmm.
And there's several names being floated out there. There's Annie Beshear, the governor of Kentucky. There's Roy Cooper, the governor of North Carolina. We have Mark Kelly, a senator from Arizona, Jesse's personal favorite and pick. We have J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois.
The richest seated elected politician in the United States, worth like $3 billion. He's the heir to the Hyatt Hotels fortune.
And then we also have Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. Strange that this list doesn't have Gretchen Whitmer, because I've also seen Gretchen Whitmer's name floated out there. And then Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, has also been floated. So there are some choices out there.
Yeah.
And some of these people have been kind of auditioning, I would say, going out, making their media appearances and auditioning. Others haven't. Like Mark Kelly, your personal choice, the senator from Arizona.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him anywhere. He's not giving any interviews.
Yeah, I think he's... we've got problems with him politically. He's not perfect on all the issues, for sure not. I mean, he represents Arizona. But I think it's like beneath the dignity of a guy like Mark Kelly to go out there and really try to do the song and dance to try to get picked. Mm. You're going to pick him on its merits and what he can offer the ticket. He's not going to go out there and... maybe I'm just trying to sell it in my own mind. I don't know, but mm-hmm. I do like
cope
him.
And seethe.
Cope and seethe. Yeah, cope and seethe over here, Jesse Dollimore. I do think he would be the best choice for the ticket because of what he brings.
Oh, it would be great.
Yeah, I mean, he's an astronaut. His wife was almost murdered in a right-wing, psychotic gun attack.
Gabby Giffords.
Again, fighter pilot for the Navy, astronaut. I mean, he is living a fantasy of children everywhere. I want to be an astronaut when I grow up. He's like the human embodiment of the flying American flag. He would be great. He would. I'm not going to continue to sell, but you know, he's a veteran. All that stuff that Republicans act like they claim they care about, he represents.
Yeah. There is some concern about him because he's against the PRO Act, and so labor unions are kind of concerned that he would be the pick.
Not a super ally of labor.
I also think Josh Shapiro is probably not going to be picked there was a recent report about some possible sexual harassment allegations.
Settlement with a high-ranking close aide related to that. Also, his real support of the genocide taking place in Israel or in Gaza.
Yeah, he made some shitty comments about the college campus protesters. So I think Josh Shapiro is probably out.
He would offer a lot to the ticket relative to securing Pennsylvania. That is true. But, you know, you want to have someone who's as aligned as possible going in.
Right.
And I think that wouldn't be Josh Shapiro. But Annie Beshear, you know, he wouldn't be my pick, but he certainly would be a good one.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about the strategy of possibly picking him or not when we get through these clips a little bit. But as we were talking about, this auditioning process is happening, and Annie Beshear wasted no time, really. He got on these morning shows and he was going after J.D. Vance.
As vice president, you undoubtedly would be able to help your own people. So are you at least open to the possibility of being a running mate to Vice President Harris?
Well, I think if somebody calls you on that, what you do is at least listen. And I want the American people to know what a Kentuckian is and what they look like, because let me just tell you that J.D. Vance ain't from here. Now, the nerve that he has to call the people of Kentucky, of Eastern Kentucky, lazy. Listen, these are the hardworking coal miners that powered the Industrial Revolution, that created the strongest middle class the world has ever seen, powered us through two world wars. We should be thanking them, not calling them lazy. And so today was an opportunity to both support the vice president, but also to stand up for my people. Nobody calls us names, especially those that have worked hard for the betterment of this country.
Well, they created the strongest white middle class the world has ever seen. Let's not whitewash bullshit, you know what I mean?
You can see the contempt for Andy Beshear that Jesse has. There's some coping Steve
happening
right now.
I do not have contempt. I just, you know, let's call it what it is. He's talking about baby boomers and, you know, older generation than that. And I know you got a fucking joke.
I'm just, your Mark Kelly tattoo is kind of poking out of your shirt.
He's my boyfriend, astronaut Mike Dexter.
So what he also did is he went after J.D. Vance on J.D. Vance's previous abortion comments, because J.D. Vance supports a national abortion ban. And I know that might be surprising to you. You're like, what? All I know about J.D. Vance is he has a beard, because that's what everyone is focusing on in their reporting, like the New York Times. But no, he supports a national abortion ban, and he's made horrific comments about people who seek abortions, women who are getting abortions. So here's Andy Beshear going after J.D. Vance on this issue specifically.
I'm excited to fully endorse Vice President Harris as for the next president of the United States. The vice president is smart and strong, which will make her a good president. But she's also kind and has empathy, which can make her a great president. And the contrast between her and those running on the other side couldn't be clearer. As a prosecutor, as an attorney general like I used to be, she prosecuted rapists, domestic abusers, stood for victims and put away those abusers. Now look at the other side, where J.D. Vance calls pregnancy arising from rape inconvenient. No, it's just plain wrong. He suggests that women should stay in abusive relationships. Listen, a domestic abuser isn't a man, he's a monster, and no one should support anyone having to stay in those relationships. So the vice president is ready. She has my full endorsement. I'm going to do everything I can to support her.
All right, some news.
So here's where strategy comes in, because we're going to play a clip of Andy Beshear from 2023 after he vetoed a Republican bill that would restrict access to bathrooms, that would ban access to gender affirming care. He vetoed this legislation. And where strategy comes into it is Andy Beshear going to bring something to the ticket that really helps us win and secure the election? Or are the people of Kentucky better served by keeping him as governor? And when I say the people of Kentucky, I'm talking about trans people, right? The importance of having a governor who can protect and step in and veto a bill that would restrict their rights is pretty important.
Your race was also interesting in a lot of ways, but one of the issues that came up was, of course, trans rights. I mean, you did not hesitate to veto a sweeping anti-trans bill passed by the Kentucky State Legislature, but your opponents still kind of came after, they also, because of that, probably came after you on that. It didn't work. What does that tell you about the effectiveness of this kind of an attack and, you know, this approach from a lot of Republicans out there?
Well, all children are children of God. That's what my faith teaches me, and I was going to stand up especially for the most marginalized children that didn't deserve either a state legislature or an entire campaign and all these super PACs picking on them. These are individuals that are already at the margins. The studies show suffer more mental health issues, are more at risk for suicide. We ought to be in the suicide prevention business and not further harming kids who are going through too much. I did it because it was the right thing, but I will say the way these super PACs and my opponent went about their campaign was just mean, and it was gross, and it was cruel, and people don't like that.
That is not who we are. And this ought to be a message that you can't scapegoat people just to get folks angry. And it's wrong, right? Think about what some people are doing, trying to dehumanize other human beings, trying to turn people against each other, to even foster hate and anger towards another American here, another Kentuckian. Why? So you can elect one more person that has a certain letter behind their name. Listen, this can't be right and left. Some things have to be basic right and wrong, and we've got to get our politics back to where we ask the basic question of right and wrong. There's got to be limits. I mean, this can't be a ruleless type of game, because it's so much more than a game. Ask any of these kids.
So you can see how he would be appealing as a vice president, presidential candidate. But you can also see how it would be important to keep him in his current position.
Yeah, like, I guess the question is, could he deliver the state of Kentucky, the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
Could he deliver the state? Now, I don't know that he could, but I think Mark Kelly certainly could deliver Arizona, which we need. But they're not the only ones, you know. Gavin Newsom, despite constitutional questions about whether the president and the vice president can be on the same ticket from the same state on the same ticket, what's he going to deliver? He would be fantastic as a communicator, but California's not going red.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't deliver much, even though he would be a great choice because of who he is.
Right.
But the other choices, you know, Tim Walz being one of them from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
That's another state that we definitely need. It's among that corridor that does flip back and forth: Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. You know, it's no longer Ohio and Florida anymore. It's those other states.
Yeah, and he's also great. I mean, I think we probably talked about him previously on the show because he signed into law the universal free school lunch bill, and there's been, you know, memes on Twitter where they're showing the juxtaposition of him signing the bill to give free school lunch and then Sarah Huckabee Sanders signing the bill to
erode child labor laws. and in the photo, it's a juxtaposition of the kids hugging with smiles on their faces,
right,
Tim
right,
Walz,
yeah,
and these dour, like, coal miner kids.
Oh.
In the room with Sarah Huckabee Sanders signing that bill.
So sad, so sad. So this is Governor Tim Walz that we could argue is auditioning again, going in on J.D. Vance and Trump, giving a preview of what it might look like if he were to debate J.D. Vance.
What I know is that people like J.D. Vance know nothing about small town America. My town had 400 people in it, 24 kids in my graduating class, 12 were cousins, and he gets it all wrong. It's not about hate. It's not about collapsing in. The golden rule there is mind your own damn business. Their policies are what destroyed rural America. They've divided us. They're in our exam rooms. They're telling us what books to read. And I think what Kamala Harris knows is bringing people together around the shared values, strong public schools, strong labor unions that create the middle class, healthcare that's affordable and accessible. Those are the things. You look what they're talking about, they went right to division. They did not give us a plan on healthcare. Donald Trump talked about infrastructure. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris built bridges, built roads. So I think this is going back to the bread and butter, getting away from this division. We do not like what has happened where we can't even go to Thanksgiving dinner with our uncle because you end up in some weird fight that is unnecessary. And I think bringing back people together. Well, it's true. These guys are just weird. And it's, you know, they're running for He-Man Women Haters Club or something. That's what they go at. That's not what people are interested in. And there is angst because robber barons like J.D. Vance and Donald Trump gutted the Midwest, told us we didn't do that. They talk about private schools. Where in the heck are you going to find a private school in a town of 400? Those are public schools. Those are great teachers that are out there making a difference and gave us an opportunity to succeed. That angst that J.D. Vance talks about in Hillbilly Elegy. None of my hillbilly cousins went to Yale, and none of them went on to be adventure capitalists or whatever. It's not who people really are. So I think that message doesn't resonate. You saw it yesterday. The energy out here exploded. We all broke fundraising records, but that's not what I look at. Door knocks are full. Phone banks are full. People are talking about what's possible. We are finally on offense about an America where we're all together. So good. Have Orban down to Florida. The vice president will come out here and stand in a Planned Parenthood. Yeah. She stands in a Planned Parenthood clinic in St. Paul. That's what people want to see.
All right. Maybe I changed my vote.
How good is he?
Yeah, he's very good. He's also, I love of all the truths that were just told in that short clip, the most self-evident one is that these people are weird. They're just fucking weird, man.
Yeah. I think that that needs to be the approach.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for sure he's solid.
Yeah. So he also went
He's also joyous.
He is.
And regular.
Yes.
A normal guy who brings normal person energy. And it's natural.
I think that's what maybe is contributing to some of my hope. It's making the juxtaposition between those two campaigns so clear, right? When you have Kamala Harris laughing, when you have, I know he's not on the ticket, but when you have these people that are coming out and auditioning and they are leading with how they're going to improve people's lives. And yeah. All we saw at the RNC, even though they tried to float unity, right. Is attacking, marginalizing, oppressing.
Fear-mongering.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it's a completely different vision for America. It's like President Obama's hope and change.
Yeah.
But without saying that, without leaning into that.
Also, how long did the sympathy train for Donald Trump's little flesh wound that didn't require stitches, they're bummed. That didn't last any time at all. It's over.
Yeah.
The Secret Service director's already resigned. That's a dead story.
Yeah.
Fucking great.
So, Tim Walz, that was kind of a friendly environment, you could say, because it was MSNBC. I think it was Morning Joe. This is Tim Walz when he's not in a friendly environment on Fox News.
There is a certain irony to saying that Donald Trump is bad for democracy when it looks pretty obvious that the Democratic Party leapfrogged the entire democratic system, and they did it in about 24 hours publicly.
Look, the process has always been there. I welcome if Sean or anybody wants to become a DNC delegate, you're welcome to. But what I know is Democrats are ready to move when the situation warrants it. Look, it doesn't matter convictions. It doesn't matter failed policies. Republican Party stuck with Donald Trump. He's yours. You've got him. Welcome to it. Democratic Party can make our decisions. We pick our nominee. Look, if you don't like it, don't vote for it in November. But I think the American public are going to see. They knew that this administration was delivering. We knew that as far as economic numbers faced against global numbers, America's in a far better shape. And we also know that a foreign policy that respects our alliance, not cozying up to dictators like Putin and Orban, is not the way to go.
How about this one, Governor?
You know, J.D. Vance, yeah. mind your own business is what I would tell them.
You should be telling that to Bill Hemmer himself. Tell him to shut the fuck up. Let me tell you this. I can't find two fucks to give about how the Republicans nominate their candidate. I don't care if it's democratically elected or... Who fucking cares? Do your thing. Do your best. Put up your person. However you come to that conclusion. Why do they care? And I'm going to tell you. Why do they care how the Democrats pick theirs? It's because they are fucking petrified of Kamala Harris.
Cope and Seethe.
Cope and Seethe. The title for the episode.
So, yeah. I remember at the end of the last episode we recorded, we were in this place where there was a constant drip drip of elected officials, Democratic elected officials saying President Biden needs to go.
Yeah.
And we were scared. We were wanting that. We were gently trying to prep the audience for that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people would criticize, well, all you got to do is just tell the truth. No matter what, just say what you say, what's on your mind. Not when you got a platform. You know, we don't want to add to the cacophony of questions and nervousness. We don't want to do that.
Well, and there was reason to be nervous. There was reason to be concerned about how things would play out and what might happen. And now we know that everything's fine.
Yeah.
It's
more than fine.
It's going very, very well.
Yeah.
What our job is now is to make sure that continues. And if you are out here saying, I don't know if she can win, I don't know, that's a choice. That's a choice. You can do something. You can donate. You can sign up to volunteer. You can knock doors. You can make phone calls. You can do what you need to do. And we can really make a difference here if we all get involved. But if we sit back and say, she can't do it, this can't happen, then that's what's going to happen. We're going to lose.
Yeah, I am more energized and excited about her. And listen, I didn't support her candidacy in 2020. She wasn't my choice. And we were Elizabeth Warren people. She's not progressive enough for me. But let me tell you, on a ticket against Donald Trump, she's it. And I think she will do some damage, do some work. And I think that I'll predict it now. I think that if all things go well and everybody gets behind, it'll be the kind of electoral defeat of Donald Trump that we did not see in 2020. It'll be more than a 7 million vote disparity.
Yeah. And I am excited. I am, like I said, this is the first time that I have felt like this in a very long time. I feel hope. I feel excited. I am eager. And
you're ready for her to be the mamala of the country.
I am so ready for that. And I think.
Have we ever played that clip so people know what we're talking about?
No, we need to get it, though. It's when Drew Barrymore
was like, oh, we need you to be the mamala of the country.
It's so cringe. Oh, and you God can tell damn. That Kamala hated it.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for her in the moment.
It's like she was like close talker, too. Like way too in her grill.
Oh, that's what Drew Barrymore does. She like holds your hand and like touches your leg while
too
she's
much.
Interviewing you.
No thanks.
It's a very intimate setting. So yeah, I think she's going to be great. I think she is great. And I'm looking forward to it. So we would love to know what you think about this. You can call, leave a voicemail, 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
We would invite you to give to the Patreon. Become a patron of this show, helping us move the conversation forward on an episode-by-episode basis. You can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. We welcome your participation in this conversation. Brittany dropped the number. We'd love to hear from you. We will see you next time. We want to hear from you. Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt It.